In 1940, Roosevelt was a third-term candidate, a reluctant one, but still eager for a good, old-fashioned political fight.
I still remember, he is one of that great historic trio which has voted consistently against every measure for the relief of agriculture, Morton, Barton, and Fish.
Roosevelt's opponent, Wendell Willkie, was cheered to victory at the Republican convention by this famous ovation. Willkie accepts the nomination.
I accept the nomination of the Republican Party for President of the United States. I accept it in the spirit in which it was given at our convention at Philadelphia. The spirit of dedication. I herewith dedicate myself with all my heart, with all my mind, and with all my soul to make this nation strong. But I say this too, in the pursuit of that goal, I shall not lead you down the easy road. If I am chosen the leader of this democracy, as I am now of the Republican Party, I shall lead you down the road of sacrifice and of service to your country.
The campaign.
I am an old campaigner, and I love a good fight.
At this particular crisis in their history, the New Deal Party captured the Democratic Convention at Chicago. It went through a transparent rigmarole about drafting a candidate for president.
The overwhelming majority of Americans will not be scared by this blitzkrieg of verbal incendiary bombs.
This is the scourge of government above the people, without the people, and in spite of the people.
What kind of political shenanigans are those? I am fighting for a free America, for a country in which all men and women have equal rights to liberty and justice.
People of Elwood, it looks to me like it's going to be a hot time in the old town tonight.
In 1944, Thomas E. Dewey, the Republican candidate, makes a vigorous try for the presidency.
To campaign against an administration which was conceived in defeatism, which failed for 8 straight years to restore our domestic economy, which has been the most wasteful, extravagant, and incompetent administration in the history of the nation, and worst of all, one which has lost faith in itself and in the American people.
FDR's sense of humor had not dimmed.
These Republican leaders have not been content with attacks on me, or on my wife, or on my sons. No, not content with that. They now include my little dog, Fala. Well, of course, I don't resent attacks, and my family don't resent attacks, but Fala does resent them.
Thomas Dewey cannot turn the tide that runs so strongly for the wartime commander-in-chief, but 5 months later, Franklin Roosevelt is dead, and Harry S. Truman becomes president of the United States. In 1948, running for the presidency again, this time against Truman, Thomas E. Dewey was more confident of victory.
Now, what is the position of America in the world today? Instead of plowing steadily forward toward the goal of peace and security, our ship of state is bobbing around like a cork on a stormy sea. First it goes in one direction and then in another. Today it's up, tomorrow it's down. Last year we were scrapping our military establishment. This year we're building it up. Last year, our government was busy stripping Germany of its factories. This year, it claims it's trying to stop the stripping and repair some of the damage. It goes on and on. Last year, we ratified a treaty taking Trieste away from Italy. Now we're trying to make amends by offering to return it. Last week, we were shipping warplane motors and machinery to the Soviet Union. This week, we're not, I hope.
But Truman was not worried. In his famous Give 'em Hell speech at the Democratic Convention, he fired enthusiasm into the delegates with his rip-roaring style and self-confidence.
Senator Barkley and I'll win this election and make these Republicans like it. Don't you forget that. We'll do that because they're wrong and we're right, and I'll prove it to you in just a few minutes. The Republican platform comes out for slum clearance and low rental housing. I've been trying to get them to pass that housing bill ever since they met the first time. And it's still resting in the Rules Committee, that bill is. Republican platform favors equality of educational opportunity and the promotion of education. I've been trying to get Congress to do something about that ever since they came there. And that bill is at rest in the House of Representatives. The Republican platform urges extending and increasing Social Security benefits. Think of that. Increasing Social Security benefits. And yet when they had the opportunity, they took 750,000 people off the Social Security roll. I wonder if they think they can fool the people of the United States with such poppycock as that.
During the campaign,
we agreed that this was too grave a time for politics as usual.
He opened his mouth and he closed his eyes. And he swallowed the terrible record of that good-for-nothing 80th Congress.
These members of Congress are described as predatory animals. Each has a moss back.
Sounds to me like the same old phonograph record, but this year, the record has a crack.
Now, why do you suppose grown-up men would ever have used such desperate tactics in a free election anyway?
I don't care about that. I don't care what they say. There's nothing new they can say about me. It's all been said.
The pollsters picked Dewey. It's so close, one newspaper even declares Dewey the winner. But Truman proves the experts wrong. In 1952, the Republicans, eager to get back into power after 20 lean years, are sharply split between the forces supporting Senator Robert A. Taft of Ohio and those supporting General Dwight D. Eisenhower. Taft, in making a plea for delegates, expresses his philosophy of conservatism.
Our country is a great country because it has had 165 years of freedom. That freedom is responsible for all our progress in ideas, in intellectual self-reliance, in research and science, and also for our great production, which has given our people the highest standard of living in the history of the world. Its destruction is threatened today by the spending and taxation and excessive power of big government in Washington. I have fought that growth for 14 years. We can only preserve our liberty by putting into office men and women imbued with a hatred of that totalitarian philosophy of spending and power.
But Ike's tremendous personal popularity wins over the convention and the nomination.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have summoned me on behalf of millions of your fellow Americans to lead a great crusade for freedom in America and freedom in the world. I know something of the solemn responsibility of leading a crusade. I have led one. I take up this task, therefore, in a spirit of deep obligation, mindful of its burdens and of its decisive importance, I accept your summons. I will lead this crusade.
The Democratic Convention chooses Adlai Stevenson, governor of Illinois, an extremely reluctant candidate.
Ladies and gentlemen of the convention, my fellow citizens, I accept your nomination and your program. I should have preferred to hear those words uttered by a stronger, a wiser, a better man than myself. But after listening to the president's speech, I even feel better about myself. And now, my friends, that you have made your decision, I will fight to win that office with all my heart and my soul. And with your help, I have no doubt that we will win. The ordeal of the 20th century, the bloodiest, most turbulent era of the whole Christian age, is far from over. Sacrifice, patience, understanding, and implacable purpose may be our lot for years to come. Let's face it. Let's talk sense to the American people. Let's tell them the truth, that there are no gains without pains, that we are now on the eve of great decisions, not easy decisions, like resistance when you're attacked, but a long, patient, costly struggle which alone can assure triumph over the great enemies of man, war, poverty, and tyranny, and the assaults upon human dignity, which are the most grievous consequences of each.
The campaign.
I have tried to talk about public questions. This road has led me through some 20 states. But strangely enough, my friends, this road has been a lonely road, because I never meet anybody coming the other way.
An American doesn't twiddle his thumbs while his garden is wrecked by a crowd of vandals and his house invaded by a gang of robbers. He goes into action. When the same sort of thing happens to his country, an American goes into action by getting into politics, fast and hard. I'm in politics just that way.
I hear it said now and then that I am talking over the heads of the people. Well, if it's a mistake to appeal to intelligence and reason instead of emotion and prejudice, then I plead guilty to the charge.
I have said and will say again and again that there is only one issue in this campaign. That issue is the mess in Washington.
Neither political party has a monopoly of virtue or of rascality.
Why, my distinguished opponent is using every trick in the book to get himself off the hook of the present administration record.
Senator Taft says he prepared his statement before he saw the general. This must be the first time that the vanquished dictated the peace terms to the victor.
Poor old Ike. He has been taken into camp. He has changed. They say they were mistaken about me. They sure were.
Stevenson received more votes than any other candidate in the history of our nation, except one, the man who beat him.
Someone asked me as I came in down on the street how I felt. And I was reminded of a story that a fellow townsman of ours used to tell, Abraham Lincoln. And they asked him how he felt once after an unsuccessful election. He said he felt like a little boy who had stubbed his toe in the dark, that he was too old to cry, but it hurt too much to laugh.
Campaign 56. The Democratic Convention was a free-for-all, with rising controversy over the civil rights plank and uncertainty over the convention's choice for the nomination. Harry S. Truman supports Harriman.
And now, my friends, I've made up my mind. In the light of my knowledge of the office of president, I believe that the man best qualified to be the next president of the United States is Governor Harriman of New York.
John F. Kennedy nominates Stevenson.
Fellow delegates, I give you our next president of the United States, Adlai E. Stevenson.
Adlai Stevenson accepts.
I come here on a solemn mission. I accept your nomination and your program. 4 years ago, I stood in this same place and uttered those same words to you. But 4 years ago, I did not seek the honor that you bestowed upon me. This time, as you may have noticed, it was not entirely unsolicited.
The Republican Convention of 1956 was a fairly cut and dried affair. The campaign. Ike talks of prosperity.
I have seen the face of our land, soil, rivers, and forests. Their richness and their power conserved with care, developed with skill by a people thankful for this bounty of a generous providence. And there are other great things that I haven't had no need to see, for I know them. I mean all the rolling mills and open hearths, the smoking factory stacks and flaming furnaces. Tonight, even as we meet here, the glow of these furnaces and the light of these factories send their bright signals to the dark skies above. And they tell the world that 66 million Americans know today more secure and rewarding work than any people have ever known, anywhere in the world, any time in history.
We are told that everything is fine, that we are enjoying unprecedented peace and prosperity and progress. Progress. When the richest country in the world doesn't have schools and teachers enough for its children. When it doesn't have hospitals for its sick. When there is widespread need among our older citizens. When ugly slums deface our cities and offend human dignity. When millions of Americans are still denied opportunities because of race or color.
President Eisenhower again swept to victory over Stevenson, this time increasing his margin by several million votes. The Democratic Convention in 1960 was almost an anti-climax to the primary campaign waged by Senator John F. Kennedy. His victories in Wisconsin and West Virginia over veteran Senator Hubert Humphrey convinced most of the professionals that he could win in November. Frantic efforts at the convention on the part of Stevenson supporters were unable to stop the bandwagon, and Kennedy was nominated on the first ballot. In a fateful decision, Senator Kennedy chose as his running mate Senator Lyndon B. Johnson of Texas. At the Republican convention, there was no significant opposition to the nomination of Vice President Richard M. Nixon, who chose Henry Cabot Lodge of Massachusetts as his running mate. The campaign of 1960 will go down in history as the first campaign in which presidential candidates debated face-to-face before an estimated television and radio audience of more than 70 million Americans. Here is one highlight from the great debates between Senator Kennedy and Vice President Nixon.
I am never satisfied with the economic growth of this country. I'm not satisfied with it even if there were no communism in the world, but particularly when we're in the kind of a race we're in, we have got to see that America grows just as fast as we can, provided we grow soundly. Because even though we have maintained, as I pointed out in our first debate, the absolute gap over the Soviet Union, even though the growth in this administration has been twice as much as it was in the Truman administration, that isn't good enough, because America must be able to grow enough not only to take care of our needs at home for better education and housing and health, all these things we want. We've got to grow enough to maintain the forces that we have abroad and to wage the non-military battle for the world, in Asia, in Africa, and Latin America. It's going to cost more money, and growth will help us to win that battle. Now, what do we do about it? And here, I believe, basically, that what we have to do is to stimulate that sector of America, the private enterprise sector of the economy, in which there is the greatest possibility for expansion. So that is why I advocate a program of tax reform, which will stimulate more investment in our economy. In addition to that, we have to move on other areas that are holding back growth. I refer, for example, to distressed areas. We have to move into those areas with programs so that we make adequate use of the resources of those areas. We also have to see that all of the people of the United States, the tremendous talents that our people have, are used adequately. That's why in this whole area of civil rights, the equality of opportunity for employment and education is not just for the benefit of the minority groups, it's for the benefit of the nation, so that we can get the scientists and the engineers and all the rest that we need. And in addition to that, we need programs, particularly in higher education, which will stimulate scientific breakthroughs, which will bring more growth.
Senator Kennedy.
The Vice President suggested a number of things. He suggested that we aid distressed areas. The administration has vetoed that bill passed by the Congress twice. He suggested we pass an aid to education bill. The administration and the Republican majority in the Congress has opposed any realistic aid to education. And the Vice President cast a deciding vote against federal aid for teacher salaries in the Senate, which prevented that being added. This administration and this country last year had the lowest rate of economic growth, which means jobs, of any major industrialized society in the world in 1959. And when we have to find 25,000 new jobs a week for the next 10 years, we're going to have to grow more. Governor Rockefeller says 5%. Democratic platform and others say 5%. Many say 4.5%. The last 8 years, the average growth has been about 2.5%. That's why we don't have full employment today.
Let us end our trip through 68 years of election campaigns with these words from John F. Kennedy's inaugural address of 1961.
For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago. The world is very different now, for man holds in his mortal hands the power to abolish all forms of human poverty and all forms of human life. And yet the same revolutionary beliefs for which our forebears fought are still at issue around the globe. The belief that the rights of man come not from the generosity of the state, but from the hand of God. We dare not forget today that we are the heirs of that first revolution. Let the word go forth from this time and place to friend and foe alike that the torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans born in this century, tempered by war, disciplined by a hard and bitter peace, proud of our ancient heritage, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those human rights to which this nation has always been committed and to which we are committed today at home and around the world. Let every nation know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. This much we pledge and more. In the long history of the world, only a few generations have been granted the role of defending freedom
in its hour of maximum danger. I do not shrink from this responsibility. I welcome it. I do not believe that any of us would exchange places with any other people or any other generation. The energy, the faith, the devotion which we bring to this endeavor will light our country and all who serve it. And the glow from that fire can truly light the world. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.